The Prime Minister has announced more restrictions on Putin, on Russia, and joining me now to follow up on this, international trade lawyer Mark Warner. Mark, good morning.
Good morning, Jerry.
Have you poured out all your Russian vodka?
Luckily, I don't have any of that left in beforehand, so okay.
I see. All right. What kind of impact will that have that the LCBO says we're not taking it? And by the way, that is spreading around the world of people saying we're, you know, taking Russian vodka off the shelves at their liquor stores and bars and restaurants.
Yeah. So the Canadian part, I mean, I don't know how big an impact it will be because we're not, it's a fairly small amount of what I think the LCBO sells. So I'm obviously for vodka drinkers, it's a big deal. The other thing to note is not everything that has a Russian sounding name on it, like Stolichnaya or Muscovia or whatever it is, are actually made in Russia. Some of them are made in Latvia or in the United States. So there are lots of these debates about who owns what. So you might actually find that your favorite vodka will still be on the shelves. That won't, from what I understand, be the case with Ruski Standard, which was my favorite vodka. But fortunately, that's going to be gone.
All right. But is it more symbolic, or if worldwide it becomes more than just the LCBO? I know they're starting to do it in various countries around the world, including the United States, which is a huge market. Will that have an effect, or does a guy like Putin actually not care?
Well, I think obviously if it really became really big and around the world, everyone stopped buying Russian vodka, I think that would have an effect. I don't know to what extent countries are really going to do that. Some of the provinces in Canada are doing it. Some of the states are doing it, but only the states that have public liquor companies like we do. So, I don't know how far this is going to go. And keep in mind, other countries, like let's say France. France has a huge issue where Russia is already trying not to buy French champagne. So I don't know that France would want to raise this issue because they sell a lot of wine. We don't really sell anything, apart from ice wine. So there's the threat of retaliation is not great. But I think other countries will want to think very carefully, like Australia or whatever, about what would happen given what they sell to Russia, which is more substantial probably.
International trade lawyer Mark Warner is with me. What kinds of things have impact? Canada will impose sanctions directly on Vladimir Putin and his inner circle of advisors in terms of freezing their ability to move money, their bank accounts, etc.
So that one strikes me as mostly symbolic in as far as it's gone so far. I mean, it's doubtful that you're going to find a house in Markham with Putin's name on it. If there is anything in Canada, it would probably be something through a number of his cronies, family members, and it's probably been owned through various trust companies and in other places like in the Caribbean and British Virgin Islands or whatever. So in order to get after that stuff, you really have to have a strong mechanism to trace it, and that in Canada we call FinTrack, which is not very well financed. They don't do a great job, which is one of the reasons, just as an aside, people like me were all annoyed a couple of weeks ago of sidetracking FinTrack to deal with the so-called truckers in the Ottawa dispute, because we don't do a very good job of doing this already. But at any rate, if we're serious about it, we'd have to go after that. We'd also have to name more people than the ones we've named. I think there's an estimate that one of the dissidents in Russia is a guy called Alexei Navalny, and who's in prison in Russia. And his foundation has estimated there are about 35 key cronies, oligarchs around Putin who are essential to get at. Only six of those have really been targeted by any of the countries, the major countries in the world, and only about two of them have targeted only two of them, I think, are targeted in more than one country. So we haven't done a good job of going after them. Of course, one of those cronies is a guy called Abramovich. And a lot of the Canadian reporting and other reporting talks about he's the owner of Chelsea, the football team in England. But he's also the owner of a steel company or a substantial shareholder in a steel company in Alberta. We haven't touched him. So there's a lot of smoke and mirrors to this. How much do we want to hurt the Russians? How much do we want to hurt ourselves? So far, we're targeting a lot of things that could hurt, we think will hurt the Russians. So we've heard it. We're going after oil and gas. We're going after banks, but we're excluding financial companies or oil and gas companies. Why? Because they sell a lot of oil and gas to Germany, essentially, and to the European Union. So that's carved out, and a lot of American companies own stuff. So you really have to dig into the weeds in this. I don't know. It's definitely more than symbolic. It is going to hurt Russia, but the real pain to Putin is what gets money out of his pockets is if you go after oil and gas. So far, most of that has been excluded.
And the premier, the premier of Saskatchewan, I was quoting him a few minutes ago, Mark, Scott Moe, says that won't happen because to our federal governments, he was talking about both the United States and Canada, Western pipelines are more dangerous than Putin, apparently. That's what he said.
Yeah, I actually don't. I've read a couple of these things in Canada. I think Canada is a big story to this. The issue with that is really Germany. It's mostly the Germans, right? The Germans are so, they decided to phase out nuclear and get rid of coal and rely on sun and wind, and they can't make their grid work, and they're buying lots of natural gas from Russia. So really the driver on the exclusions from oil and gas is Germany and the European Union. Secondarily, it's the United States, but that's you know, the Americans have wanted to sell natural gas through fracking and ship it over an LNG ships over to Germany, but that's kind of a secondary concern, really. I think what's driving the exclusion of oil and gas is really Germany.
All right, so an angry statement from the embassy of the Russian Federation in Canada. They said that they summarized the actions as unprecedentedly unfriendly and an absurd step. It contradicts all principles of interstate relations and diplomatic ethics. And they say the cabinet is approaching the point of an irreparable severance of bilateral ties. Response will follow. Mark Warner is with me, international trade lawyer. You deal in trade. What kind of impact would it have if Canada to kick the Russian ambassadors and staff and everybody out of this country, sent them back to Russia?
So what we have to keep in mind always is that we're not only the effect that we might have on Putin, but what is the follow-on effect on Canadian companies? So the biggest one that I can see so far is a gold miner in, I guess, Siberia, Kinross, and they have one of the huge mines over there. They must be burning the candles right now, trying to figure out how they're going to comply with the various sanctions that have been applied in Canada and other countries, and what's going to happen if the Russians say in return, which I think we're going to see eventually, they're just going to say, fine. You don't want to finance your companies in Russia? Thank you. We own it now. And then what do we do? There'll be lots of lawsuits and arbitration things. But that's the follow-on effect for us, is what do we own over there? I don't think we own a lot, but if we do, it's in mining. And people need to be really wondering what's going to happen to us in return.
Okay. I started this by saying I usually hang up on people if they make a Nazi comparison, but I think that Putin moving on Ukraine is like Hitler moving on Poland, and we don't want to be naval chamberlain and think we can negotiate with Putin and make sure we keep our oil supply going or whatever. There's a point at which you have to say enough's enough.
I think that's right. It's unfortunate that it's come to this. You know, Jerry, it's a big subject, and it's not for today. But, you know, the issue, I think, really part of this is the Russians have not wanted Ukraine to get too close to the European Union, to become a member of it. And they've made that clear. That's why they went after Ukraine the first time in 2014. And, you know, I guess one of the questions is we've got a Europe, United States, Canada, whatever. We all have to sort of, we can't suck and blow on it. We can't keep saying to Ukraine, you should get into these organizations like NATO or the EU, which will infuriate the Russians. Or we have to basically tell the Ukrainians, look, and others like the Georgians, you're never getting in. Because right now what's going to happen is nobody's happy, and it's going to lead to these kind of conflagrations. So I don't know that anyone's going to love the answer. The Europeans seem to be doubling down on letting Ukraine in. You know, I worked in Brussels for a while. You know, the European Union tilts towards Germany now. You add a huge company like Ukraine now, the European Union will look very, very different and very, very German. I'm not sure that's what we want. So it's, you have to think through the second order effects of all this stuff. I don't know what the off ramp is now, but it is complicated. I don't think if Putin went away tomorrow, I think the next leader of Russia would be equally concerned with NATO and the European Union coming right up against the border. So was Gorbachev, so was Yeltsin. It's not really just a personal issue. It's kind of a feeling of how the Russians feel. Now, I don't know what the answer to that is, but that's part of the problem.
Mark Warner, international trade lawyer. Always good to talk to you, Mark. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Ray. Have a great day.